Hey everybody, it's Axel. Before we get started, I just wanted to remind you that we are on Patreon. We've been doing a ton of podcasts. And guess what? We're not slowing down. We're doing a new podcast on David Simon's new HBO show, The Deuce. DJ is coming out with his own show, Inside DJ's DVR. We've got more podcasts, Winterfell, to give to you. Man, I'm already sitting on two or three podcasts that we recorded already. And if you were a patron, you'd already be listening to some of them. We're also going to be doing great podcasts just for patrons in the off season as well. We're really going to have a lot more time to do a large variety of stuff, as well as keeping with the podcast Winterfell, Game of Thrones type of stuff that you've come to enjoy. So check us out, Patreon.com/DVR. We're all independent podcasters doing this on our own time. So help us out, support us, become a part of the crew. Take care. Dedicated to Game of Thrones and a Song of Ice and Fire, you're listening to Podcast Winterfell, part of the DVR Podcast Network. Check us out at DVRpodcast.com. Welcome back, everyone, to Podcast Winterfell. Podcast Winterfell is a part of the DVR Podcasting Network. You can check us out at DVRpodcast.com. You can also support us on Patreon at Patreon.com/DVR. We are here with an episode to wind up, wind down, wrap up Season 7. Heath and I are here. We're going to give our overall impressions of season 7, how it ranks with the other seasons. We're going to briefly talk about each episode, and then we're going to go over some major character arcs. We're going to save predictions for another episode because, you know, we only have about, what is it, about 15 years until the next episode, next season comes out?
Yeah, it's 16, Axel.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay, 16 years. the prince that is promised has not even been born yet.
Exactly.
All right, so how you doing, Heath?
I'm doing good, Folo. It's crazy that a season is over already. Granted, we only had 7 episodes, but it cruised by, and it's hard to believe, you know. As much as I'm upset that it's, I guess, 18 months, it's a little different for me, like, in the Lost days. Like, when Lost was over, it, like, ruined me, and I needed it, and I couldn't wait. Life is different now. There's a lot of other shows. But part of me wants this last season now, but part of me knows once the last season comes, it's all over. So I'm kind of... Football season starting and other things, so we'll be distracted, you know, with other new shows. But, you know, The Thrones is where it's at, and wow, another great show is about to end in less than 2 years. It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I feel the same way. You're right about the thing with Lost is that there were not so many premiere shows back then, so it was like Lost was over, and then you could wait a couple months or longer until, like, a good HBO show came. You know what I mean? Or something like that.
Yeah.
And now there's just so much great stuff. I mean, people are asking, like, oh, is the summer box office down? It's like, well, besides the fact that it's all sequels and garbage and Transformers, there's no original ideas. It's right. Also because the best movie of the summer was on every Sunday night on HBO. I mean,
yeah.
Let's just be honest here. The effects and the level that Game of Thrones rose to, while it may have lost something, and we'll talk about that too, it so outpaced all these movies that came out during the summer. I mean, I'd much rather see a Game of Thrones action scene than, like, Iron Man fight again for the 100th time. Like, I mean, those movies are okay, but and I just compare them because they're the big blockbuster ones. But it's like, this was really, really fun, and I really enjoyed the season. But like you're saying, there's a lot of other stuff out now. There's a lot of other shows. but also, I guess, with Lost, you kind of felt like, just go back to the fucking island and shoot another episode. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of felt like it was like this little crew making something special, you know? And with Game of Thrones, it's so world-traveling huge, like as we've talked about, the largest basically the largest film and or television production in the history of the world. I mean, film's only been around for 100 years, but... And if it takes them a year and a half, it takes them a year and a half. That's how I feel. If it takes them 2 years, it takes them 2 years. I'm okay with it. I really don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, but it's a great point you bring up, Axel, is that, remember, the way television has changed, I don't mean to go filmless crazy, but just the way TV has changed, going to see a movie for less than 2 hours or 2 hours plus, you talk about it for a couple of days, and then it's over. Where these TV shows, like a Game of Thrones, it's a, 10-week event, 7-week event, but there's so much there, you rewatch it. It's just, it's a bigger event, and now that TV's become so well done, now that cable has gotten involved and they can go anywhere with it, it's trumped, sorry for the pun, but it's trumped going to see a movie. And a movie really needs to be out of this world for you to be like, dude, that was so amazing. I'm going to watch it 3 or 4 times. It's funny how it's changed, at least in my opinion, my perspective has changed. Like, I'll watch a movie, be like, oh, that's great. But before I put a movie on, I'm like, oh, is there a show I can binge instead? Because I know I'm going to get some good content. So it's funny how it has changed. And the event of going to the movie theater has changed. It's like, do we want to spend $50 when we can own 3 movies or binge something on Netflix? So it has changed a lot.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And the level, too. I mean, and I think that's what it's really about. People talk about the golden age of television, and what it really means is that the people with money decided to allow the people who are creative to be creative with the money, you know?
And right. Yeah.
Back in the day, we would say, I mean, even when we started podcasting about Lost, if there was a book series or something, we'd be like, yeah, you know, if CBS picked it up or NBC, it'd be like, yeah, that's going to be garbage. You know, they're going to turn it into some serialized, you know, and then it's like, oh, all of a sudden FX lets people do stuff and HBO is letting people do anything. I was just listening today to a new podcast called Origins by this guy, Jim Miller, who he wrote ESPN, the book, and he did not ESPN, the book, but he wrote like the behind the scenes on how ESPN was created. And he also did the book on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and I think MTV as well.
Oh, okay, MTV, yeah. And this is
because I'm a big fan of his, yeah.
Oh, awesome. Okay, so you know. So he's doing a new podcast. It's called Origins, and it's about Curb Your Enthusiasm. And one of the things, they do about a 10-15 minute little piece of an episode where they have Chris Albrecht, who was the director of programming at HBO, back then, and Curb was 17 years ago, but even back then, they let them do, to let him do whatever he wanted. Basically, he was the only person in the entire, like, country, I mean, in all of television, that was given money, and then they said, make whatever you want, right? And the only reason they did that is because he had co-created Seinfeld, right? So it's like, that was the only, now they'll do that to some comedian on Netflix.
Right.
You know, they'll be like, oh, Aziz Ansari, here's, how many million dollars, go make whatever you want. We're not going to give you any notes and then just give it to us. And then, this is why you get so much fantastic stuff. But yeah, man, Game of Thrones, they're letting them do that in this season. You know, let's talk about our overall impressions. I mean, I think coming into this, one of the things that I had been talking about when we did our preview episode for season 7 was how are they, you know, what has become known as the jetpacking or Littlefinger's teleporter or, you know, how that was going to affect the show. And here we are at the end of it, and obviously that's been a big problem for a lot of people, you know?
Has it been more of a, do you think more of a problem for book readers versus show watchers or just in general?
You know, I think it's a bigger problem for people like us. I think it's a bigger problem for critics. I think for the general audience, I don't think it's as big of a problem. I think that the general audience notices the incredible special effects and the way that there was some awesome battle almost every episode. There's more dragons. The story's moving faster. You know, they're not introducing a million new characters. So I think when I talk to people who aren't book readers, Solo, who aren't involved in this quote-unquote, like, podcast blog community, they loved this season.
That's interesting because, you know, by podcasting and by, I'm not going to say over-analyzing, but doing what we do, we fall victim of, oh, maybe we don't like it as much as if we just were watching it, just like shows like The Sinner or whatever that we just watch and don't podcast. You know, it's easier to enjoy something than, you know, but it's funny because like on Twin Peaks, I didn't know how I felt and I reached out to the community to find out what's going on or listen to podcasts because that just ended and it ended kind of crazy. So it's interesting if you just like the old days. Well, when I used to watch Lost, I didn't have anyone to talk to about it. And I'm like, I need to find out more. And so that's how I, you know, of course, we got into podcasting and learned about the internet and, you know, the forums and threads and all that good stuff. But it's almost like it's interesting because we podcast and because we listen to other podcasts and we have a community. You know, does it take away from enjoyment? Or when someone brings out, well, this happened too fast, this was poor writing, then you start thinking, oh, maybe they're right. Did I enjoy it? Did I not?
Yeah, you mean like when Donald is on a podcast?
Yeah.
Excuse me. Live on Podcast Winterfell.
Hey.
Yeah, okay. No, you bring up a great point. We've been talking about this for years. How podcasting changes your point of view because what we are doing is we're dissecting, we're deconstructing. And when you do that, you kind of see how the sausage is made and you think about that. And it takes away your ability, not your ability, but you make the decision to let the magic go so you can see, like, read between the lines on what's going on, and you have to think meta as well as within the confines of the characters and the show. And, you know, when you kind of give that up, you're right. You do, you know, you think about things in a different way. But for me, I have to say, my overall impression of season 7 is I loved it. I really did. I had a great time. Has the show changed? Yes. Is it faster? Yes. Is it more greatest hits than slow build? Yes. As a result, are they fucking some shit up? Like the Sansa and Arya stuff? Yes, they are. They're not perfect. Nothing is. Maybe not even The Wire is perfect, okay? You know?
What? Wait, what? Spoiler alert.
Not even The Wire is perfect.
No, but seriously, what bothered me the most is how we were, you know, not necessarily the community, whoever, people complaining there wasn't as many deaths this season, or, you know, our Magnificent Seven, only one person died. Dude, we've been getting frickin' deaths since season one, okay? It's okay not to have some deaths. Yeah. Like, everyone's been dying. The Red Wedding was enough for me. That, after that, I didn't care if anyone else died. Red Wedding, you got me. I was torn apart. I was shocked. You know, and there's been other deaths, but it's, you know, or, you know what, we could have got what we got, again, with the Americans, two more seasons, and this last season dragged. I love the actors. I love the characters.
Yep.
I still watched, but nothing, almost nothing happened. And so if you want to say nothing happened in Game of Thrones or was done wrong, go watch the Americans and watch last season. And hopefully the last season will be great, but they almost stalled because they had a last season. Game of Thrones didn't stall. They went in overdrive, yep. But I thought they executed it very well. Done. Let's get into the season recap.
All right. So that's, overall impression, I guess, is I think we both were really happy with the season. Okay, let's talk about this. How does it rank among the other seasons? Now, this is where I think we can talk openly about the way the show has changed without having a shit on it. Mm-hmm. But just let's just be honest. If you watch season one and then you watch season seven, obviously the show is in two different places because the story is in two different places, but the style, right. The style has kind of changed. So, how do you like ranking things? How would you rank it?
I do.
Yeah, you're a ranker. Give us a film. Let's do a mini film list ranking here.
Okay.
It'll only take 500 podcasts, and it'll always change, as yeah. Donald says.
And I may have Matt Murdock come on and re-record. That's what I did with the film. I had him come on and re-record like three sections of 10 of my top 100 just because I had to change. Okay. He was... God bless you, Matt. You, in those days when we had free time, he helped me so much getting those podcasts out. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, I have a ranking of my favorite to least.
Okay.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So here we go. 3, season 1, season 4, 6, 7, 5, 2 is my preliminary ranking. Now, 3 and 4... I'm a little messed up. I know the Red Wedding's in 3, I believe, and you know, I'd have to rewatch, but that's my preliminary ranking. But definitely 7, 5, and 2 are my bottom 3. But I still, believe me, this isn't like I think they're terrible. I still love season 2. I liked 5. I had some problems with 5, 7, the one we just saw, but yeah. So those are my. That's my rankings. What is yours? Do you have a ranking or do you just have...
Well, you know, I'm terrible at doing rankings, but I'm going to do one for you solo. And I would say my favorite season is season 1. Season 1's my favorite mm-hmm. season. After season 1, I would have to say season 3.
Okay, so
favorite.
We flip-flopped, but we're in the same, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then season 3. Then I would say it might be this season. I might rank it that high. And then I'm terrible at ranking, so I'll just jump to my least favorite season. I mean, it gets the short shaft season 2, but it does kind of seem like it almost in my mind, it seems like a bridge from season 1 to season 3, even though, I mean, technically that's what it is. It's 2. But it seems like less of a, it's almost like a 0.5 to me. I don't know why. It's great. It's awesome.
I mean, you have Blackwater. I mean, you have a lot of great things in season 2. You just have too much Shay for me. That's.
Yeah, I don't know why it is. But I still, like I said, I still rewatch it with joy, and find fantastic points in each episode. But I mean, I really like this season. I think it has rewatchability. I found myself every time I was rewatching an episode, I wasn't getting bored or anything. Except, like I'll say, the thing that stands out for me is I just wish that they had let us in on the Sansa and Arya stuff. The reason why is I don't think it was a bad story. I think they went for the trick and the gotcha instead of letting us grow and like two characters that many people had problems with the way they told their stories previously. They lost an opportunity to really bring us fully into who Sansa and Arya are now. And instead they went for the surprise, and that disappointed me.
Yeah, and did you hear about the deleted scene?
Yes, which even pissed me off more because it shows that they knew what they were doing. So I just, not piss me off, but it just shows, unfortunately, they made the wrong choice. But it happens, you know, like...
Yeah, it does.
They thought they were doing something, and it's from what some... from what some book people have said to me, or I was listening to a podcast or something where somebody was saying like George does a lot of those kind of gotchas in the book, like surprise kind of things. And maybe they were kind of, it was almost like a little bit of like homage. Other people might call it fan fiction, but I think they kind of, they just made a choice that I didn't think worked.
Right. Yeah, no, they fooled us. I liked the end result, but we had talked about this. We just needed a scene of Littlefinger, like, listening in the hallway or, something.
Yeah.
Just something small.
Oh, we should talk about...
And they didn't do that.
So, describe what the deleted scene was.
I can't remember.
Oh, okay, so I'll describe
remember?
It. Yes.
Okay.
So,
thanks.
There was a scene in which... supposedly, after Sansa talks to Littlefinger, and Littlefinger leads her through that game of, and then what would you think the worst thing someone could do, And then she's like, and they
Sansa.
Kind of... Sansa! They end with, Sansa. they end with, that Arya somehow wants to take over Winterfell, which is ridiculous or whatever. But so supposedly there's a scene where Sansa goes to Bran's room and you see her kind of pensively like, and then kind of say like, there's something I need to talk to you about. So basically giving us the clue that the thing we were missing here is that they talk to Bran. And Bran being where would Pedia, he told that he broke it down for them. And
because didn't Sansa say we should kill Arya or we have to kill her? Isn't that what also in the scene?
In the scene with Littlefinger?
No, in the scene, the missing scene.
I apologize. I would have brought something up if I know. But I think you're right, Heath. I don't think it was kill her. I think it was like hold her captive, put her in jail or something like that. Or maybe it was. I think it was that Sansa thought Arya might be trying to kill her.
Oh, okay. I knew it was something there. Okay, yeah, because that would have been weird. Like, we have to kill her.
Yeah,
that
there was another
so
part to
Sansa.
It. But you can find it. It was in an interview that Bran, what's his name, Isaac, gave to, I believe, was it Vanity Fair again? They're always getting those interviews. But he did an interview with someone, and he described this hidden scene. I'll try to tweet it out again or something, or this deleted scene, and maybe hopefully they'll put it in the Blu-rays,
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah, and this seems like something that they might bring up later and say, hey, we didn't do the best job with it. But, I mean, overall, again, to put it in with the other seasons, so why don't you talk a little bit about what you thought the differences were between this season and other seasons? Or did you? Because, I mean, I'm talking about it kind of like it's a given, but what do you think, Sola?
Yeah, the only... One of the big differences is in the past seasons, things developed more. You had more dialogue, longer scenes. People didn't go to this place and that place in, you know, the next scene. It took an episode or two where we didn't see a character. And things seemed to thaw out and then get to certain points. This season seemed to just boom, boom, boom. But having said that, think about the storylines of other seasons where it seemed appropriate, the storylines of this season, the fast pace needed to happen. Because if we stretched it out so long, it just might have, I mean, I don't think it would have fit. We're down the home stretch, and it's not just because it's the last two seasons. I think we're getting to the final act here, and it just seems like a faster pace makes sense, where seasons prior were developing characters, where the politic game is going on. There's various secrets that are about to be revealed, and it takes time. And there's a lot going on, where here, we already know these characters. Now the White Walkers are coming, the Whites are coming, Dany's coming for Cersei. It's there. It's all there. And we don't need to stretch this out. It's all coming. So, yes, it does feel different than other seasons. But you know what? It has to be this way, in my opinion. Because we could stretch this out for another 5 seasons if we did it in, say, the season 2 way. But we're at the point now we don't need to do that. It's time to get to the end. And it's time to get this going. And so, yeah, it felt like a different season, but I was ramped up. And I hate when people go filler episode, filler. I hate that. To me, I don't know, I'm just anti calling something filler. There's always something. Now, some shows are stalling. That's filler. Game of Thrones, I don't think, stalls. I think if it's slower, they're developing certain aspects because of the foreshadowing. Like season 2, if you go back and rewatch season 2 after you watch 3 and 4, there's so much great foreshadowing with the Boltons. Because, like, Roose Bolton's, like, telling, I think, Walder Frey, you know, I advised Rob and he didn't take my advice. And I'm like, when the hell did this happen? I rewatched season 2 and there's maybe 3 lines, but he does. So it is a different speed, but I'm okay. It built up to this is what I'm saying. I may contradict myself when I ramble on. I apologize. But for the most part, yeah, it was fast and different, but I accepted it and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Yeah, man. No, I think that's a good summation of it. I agree with you that, I mean, let's put it this way. I want to try to think it out that these guys approach Grimmy. They say, hey, let's make the TV show. He's kind of a part of it. I think that at some point in the beginning of it, they must have had some conversation. I tried to do a little research because I've been listening to some podcasts lately. Actually, I was listening to a friend of ours, John, who does the Princes That Were Promised podcast, which is they're having a good conversation about R plus L equals J, and they were talking a bit about the origins of the show and the supposed 2 like data dumps that George gave them that they met twice and they kind of were given like an outline of what was to come, you know? So they could so they could start writing the whole story, you know, which I find strange to begin with. I mean, I just think that's weird. Like, why wouldn't you just be on the phone with him every day talking about things? But I guess he is supposed to write the books, which brings us to our current situation where...
He's doing a great job at that.
Where, I mean, I think that you have to take into account that they went... I think they went slower because they had this material, and at a certain point, the momentum of the show overtook the material that was available. And I think that,
right.
You know, you could some, that's why some people could complain that maybe say, I think season 5 was the last season that they had material that they could use. And a lot of people thought, I think between seasons 4 and 5, that they would have gone further, you know? So maybe they, mm-hmm. in effect, did kind of stretch certain storylines out, perhaps in thinking that they were going to get another book. They were going to have the roadmap. I mean, let's not forget, these guys took this job, Dan and Dave and everyone else involved, based on the fact that there were existing books. The show is an
right.
adaptation. So it is kind of like they're flying without a net. And I can see that this season, it was different from the other seasons. It was faster. They did spend more money on battles and effects and locations. It looked fantastic. But yeah, it was faster. But as you said too, it's also brought up by the fact that we're at a different point in the story. And the story should be moving faster because we're coming to the climax. And, you know, it's just like when you're doing it solo. I mean, let's be honest here, you know, you start going a little faster.
Climaxing? Or?
Yeah, you know, yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not, you know, right. like it's you true. could have a slow roll, but most of the time it's a little bit of like, you know, rabbit action at the end there. So this is what's happens with stories. So I think if you look at the meta, you look at the outside and the inside, there's reasons for it in both ways. And to me, it didn't feel like I was watching a completely different show. Just felt like the show was moving faster.
Yeah, and what if we waited till episode 6 for Danny to get to Dragonstone? You know, it's like, I mean, come on. People would be complaining if,
exactly.
say, half this season was pushed and we didn't get the wall coming down. We didn't get the Cersei meeting with everyone. What if we didn't get a lot of that and it was just dragon and we're talking about food and Missandei and Grey Worm and for episodes? People would have been even more pissed.
Well, I think that there's some people that would be happy with it. You know, like I wouldn't be upset if they could make, if there were, you know, it'd probably kill us podcast wise, but if there were like 20 episodes of Game of Thrones a season and they were all absolutely amazing and they told this story in the depth, if it was like Westeros Alexander plots, which I don't know if some people know the reference I'm making, but it's a famous German TV series it was 100-something, it was hours, so it's very long, but they did it over a short period of time. And if they could achieve something like that on this scale, I would love to watch Game of Thrones every week for that long. But people, I mean, like, this is like the, I don't want to get political or anything, but it's like, I don't know, it's like the problem with America. It's like, when is enough for you? You know, like,
no, you're always going to have people that complain about
it. Yeah. Like, it's, we've said it before, but it's like so hard to make the show that to go at this pace, you kind of have to go faster. So, you know, I think that we're going to look back on it differently. And I think it might be interesting when you have two seasons, when you actually have kind of two and a half, because the end of last season did go at this pace, especially the last right. episode. You could actually say that the last episode of season six was the format setter for this whole season. Don't you think so?
Okay. Yeah, probably the second half of the episode, right? Because the first part of the episode was a good pace with the Light of the Seven theme, and it was awesome. And then it seemed to pick up, I think, in the second
half.
Good
point. Good
point. So the second half set the pace.
That's interesting.
Pace more. Yeah, I think the beginning of the finale of season six was regular. It did feel different, but it did feel kind of more of the Game of Thrones pace than what we're accustomed to now. But what is pace? You know what? Your heart rate goes up and you get more shit. You don't get the in-between stuff. Hey, I loved it. Moving on.
All right. Let's go. Let's do a brief talk about each episode.
Okay.
And let's see where that brings us, because I think it'll be kind of fun to take a look at each one as it is. So we started out, of course, with what we've talked about before, with the cold open with Arya. That was our first episode, getting us back into and I thought it was good the way we were brought back in to where we had left off the last season. And this episode, mm-hmm. which was Dragonstone, you have Dany landing at the beach, all that kind of good shit. I thought this was a good start to the season. What did you think?
Yeah, I loved the cold open with Arya being Walder Frey and just getting revenge. It just was like, all right, this season's going to be wicked. It had some stuff with Jon and getting the Houses of Umber and Karr Stark, you know, forgiving them and bringing them together. The Hound and the Lord of Light kind of vision and the fire thing. I don't know if I jump to the next episode. I think that's this episode. That was one I wasn't crazy about, but Dany arriving at Dragonstone was awesome. I loved that. And then Euron, you know, the fresh face Euron came in and, you know, so it was a great, it was a very good to great season opener. I enjoyed it. I was ready to rock after this episode. It was like it got me geared up for the season.
Yeah, I agree. I thought you're right. When Dany arrived at Dragonstone, it was setting. It's funny to think how foreign that was back then. And then you come through the whole season, and by episode seven, it's so much her home, you know, they did a really good job of that. And then I can remember us even discussing how they're kind of like, this was really the first time you really saw the exteriors like this of Dragonstone. That it was like, it yep. wasn't really Stannis's place, you know?
Yeah, and think about it, how far, people even complain, when the hell is Dany going to get to Westeros? And, you know, people have been complaining how many seasons it's going to take, and we wasted time with Duck Sauce and Slaver's Bay and all that. But you know what? She finally got here, and I thought it was a big moment. It was a powerful moment for me, personally, because Dany finally got there. We were on this road with her. Yeah. Whether it was slow and dull and whatnot, that could be interpreted by many as, well, you know. But she finally got there, and I thought that was powerful when she touches sand, and that's where she was born. And that, to me, signified shit's about to get real. And we're going. And yeah. that was a bigger moment for me reflecting on it than it was maybe in that episode. I was like, oh, wow, that's cool. But realizing, oh, shit, she hasn't been here you know, you start thinking about it or podcasting about it, and you're like, oh, wow, this is a bigger moment than I realized when I, you know, did my initial reaction. So in retrospect, what a great moment.
Yeah, definitely, dude. Yeah, this episode did well. It set the tone for kind of Winterfell intrigue with the whole this time in the beginning, as we forget. It was Sansa and Jon, right? So they kind of set the tone for that. We see Sam, so it sets the tone. We know where he is, and this is where we see Jorah again.
Oh, yeah, right.
Excuse me. And also, yeah, we see that the Hound sees the vision in the fire, which I believe was put there by the Night King. I'm going to go with that. I think we're going to find that out in season 8. I think that he was behind the scenes pulling strings this entire season. And it starts in the first episode that he sees this vision. And then where do we have in the penultimate episode? They're there. And in other seasons of Game of Thrones, we'd be there like 3 seasons later, you know? So,
yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So they got us going. And we also have Jaime and Cersei and Euron, that whole thing getting going. So, yeah, I thought this was a cool episode. So let's keep it going. So do you have anything else you want to say about that first episode?
No, I'm just going to say this. As much as, you know, I get on my high horse, have some wine with Tyrion and start rambling, believe me, if you to stretch out these seasons over 5-6 seasons, I wouldn't be mad, because I enjoy Game of Thrones. And like you said, if we had a 20-episode season, I would eat up everything. I would watch it for the next 5-6 years. But realistically, they only can do 2 more seasons, so I'm in no matter what they do, even though, yes, I would love more. Give me one episode of Tyrion drinking and Varys talking. That's fine. I would love it. I'd still watch. But you know what? That's not what economically and the way the world works. You only can get 16 seasons of ER and not Game of Thrones. So having said that, episode 2.
Yeah, well, also, you could shoot an entire season of ER on one episode of Game of Thrones budget. So there you go. Our next episode, Stormborn. So this is where the plot starts picking up. And this is where we get our infamous Grey Worm and Missandei scene. I wanted to bring that up very early. That it seems like that was later in the season.
Yeah, right? It's the second episode. It's weird looking back. Yeah.
I just want to bring that up. Yeah, it was weird. And we also, this is the episode where Qyburn shows Cersei the huge bow and arrow, or what are those? Why can't I ever think of that? Crossbow. The huge crossbow. So again, the foreshadowing, setting the scene early for not only the big battle when Bronn shoots it, but also eventually for the idea of a dragon going down, which is what happens in the penultimate episode. So they're doing, you know, they're kind of letting that go too. What are some other points of this episode that you liked?
Well, you know, whether I liked it or not, Hot Pie's the key to this season. I just realized.
There you go.
he's the one who tells Arya that Jon's back at Winterfell and all that. And so she, instead of going to kill Cersei, which she might have done in a couple scenes later and the season would have been over or would have changed it, she goes back, you know, to the north. Well, you know, as we know, it helped with the whole Littlefinger thing. But I find it funny that one meeting with Hot Pie. But Arya, the way she was drinking and eating at that point, you could tell she was a changed person, and she was just a different, she wasn't little Ari anymore from season 2. So that was interesting.
Yeah, you know what? Solo, I didn't even think of that. What if, you know, you're totally right. Arya could have definitely taken Cersei out. I don't think she would. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe Qyburn or the Mountain has some kind of sense, but I don't think so. I think she would have been able to take Cersei out.
Yeah. I mean, she might have had to kill Jaime or somebody to become their face, but she could have done it.
But it's you're right. If she had not had met Hot Pie and found out that, but she would have met someone along the way. But basically, it's interesting that decision there, you know.
And then Hot Pie's the key to Game of Thrones.
Wow, man. Damn, Hot Pie. So, what else did we have in this episode? Oh, this is when Sam was learning about the dragon glass and writes the letter to John, and this sets into motion the whole thing of John leaving and going to visit Danny. And which now we can bring it up. I mean, you could have at least made a little bit more effort towards showing us you were bringing dragon glass on the trip beyond the wall to make this whole dragon glass thing seemed more worth it.
Right.
But
right.
You know, I don't want to nitpick Solo, but they did set up this dragon glass so well though, you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And Sam curing Jorah's grayscale. That was, I know people said, oh, it happened too fast. Okay, that it probably did, you know, in one night, whatever. But you know, it. I'm glad he did. That was that I understand why people could nitpick at, because you know you thought time would pass, but I think in retrospect, when you look at it, it was only a night, right?
Yeah, that's true.
When that happened,
yeah, so, it was.
That they could have. It's too bad they could have. You know, maybe I don't know. Did a little thing where, oh, you know, 2 weeks later or in the next episode, but they didn't. Okay. Accepted it.
Yeah, they got it. But then again, we don't know what he was rubbing on him. So it could be some super duper formula, you know? It had something crushed up in it. It was magical or whatever. But yeah, that was a remarkable recovery.
Yeah, and we had the big attack with Euron and Yara's fleet. That was pretty impressive. I didn't expect that to happen.
No, yeah, that was pretty cool. And we never saw, after this episode, we never saw Yara or, what's her name, whose name I always get wrong, Ilaria. We never saw Ilaria, Tyene, or Yara again.
At this point, we didn't know if they were dead or not.
Right, but we don't see them for the rest of the season.
Yeah, we do.
When do we see them again?
They're captured. Euron, in a later episode, comes back and he's in the crowd and he brings them there and they put him in the cell and they...
I'm sorry. Ilaria and Tyene.
You mean Obara and Nymeria?
But after he takes Yara, we don't see her. Oh, she's in that. She's in that shot too. Okay. She's being. Oh, that's right. Because he looks down at her and complains about and talks about Theon. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm wrong. All right, I'm
Theon's going
to
rescue her, so it's okay. It's okay. It's okay. It's a whole season, you know. Granted, only 7 episodes, Axel, but come on.
I'm going to be reminded there's going to be another episode. So look at this, man.
You know what?
Oh, go ahead.
You just turned to Reek and you jumped out of the podcasting, you know, and you just were just shaking up a little bit.
That's true. That's true. I'm asked. Oh, no. I don't want to come up with a nickname that associates me with Freak Solo. Let's just keep on moving on.
Yeah, you know what? Good point. Okay, let's move on.
So we're at episode 2, but it's nice to mention we're at the end of episode 2, and we've got a huge battle scene. Pretty cool. All right.
Pretty awesome.
Now we go to the aforementioned episode, The Queen's Justice, which is where you're absolutely right. This is the episode where Cersei kills Tyene using the same poison and forces Ilari to watch, and we get that whole entrance into King's Landing by Euron, which was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I loved that. Euron, it was just that great moment of him enjoying people cheering him. It was awesome. And then, you know, we find out Yara's not dead. And, you know, he's bringing him as prisoner. And I was wrong. I thought that because he leaves when when Euron offers to marry Cersei and she denies, he's like, well, I'll bring you a present and that'll change your mind. And I didn't realize, I thought it would be Dany and it would be something like he tried to do like a season from now. I didn't realize he'd bring back the woman and child who killed her daughter. So that was, I didn't even see that coming. I don't know why I didn't, but, you know, I'm not perfect, right, Folo? So I thought it was great. And, you know, Jon coming to Dragonstone, it was like, oh, wow, he's here already. And Melisandre, you know, her and Varys have a little conversation, but then she says, you know, I'm out of here. I'm going to Volantis. I don't want to see Jon. And that's the last we see Melisandre. And, again, through the season, Melisandre, Brienne, a few others, just not much this season. We didn't get much of a character arc. We'll talk about that later. But I like Melisandre. I know DJ hates Melisandre and wants her dead, but I like her character. And so it was kind of upsetting for me that in episode 3 is the last time we see her.
Yeah, it is fascinating though to kind, and we talked a little bit on the call in the other night about maybe where she is, what possibilities there are for her coming back. But again, these episodes, this is a great episode.
Yeah,
you know, you have so much going on. You have the whole scene with Cersei, and then we end it with the Queen of Thorns' death, which was just absolutely amazing. And that whole double cross of where we thought they were at Casterly Rock, then we're at Highgarden, which I thought upon rewatch was even better than the first time. I just thought this was a fantastic episode. And the fact that this was only episode 3, yeah, it was moving fast, but I was down, man. Things were happening and they were important things, and early in the season too. So this was a really cool, also we had Bran arriving at Winterfell.
Oh gosh. Yeah. How could we forget that? But yeah. So yeah, this episode, it had its like kind of fastness with the voiceover with Tyrion and the Castle Rock and Highgarden stuff, but we got the great scene with Cersei, you know, killing the Sand Snake Mama and that, and then the Jaime Olenna scene that just was perfect pace. It wasn't too much. It just really put this episode together, and I really liked episode 3 and what we'll talk about next 4. It was just a good back to back for me. It really made me happy.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you're right. These are good back to backs, man. So yeah, this was a fantastic episode, and maybe Queen of Thorns' death was the best single scene of the entire season for me.
Oh yeah, I have it right up there as well. It was, you know, Diana Rigg is just fantastic, and it paid off so well. It was great.
All right, so now we move on to episode 4, The Spoils of War, and this is when Arya returns to Winterfell. So now Sansa can have two weirdo siblings around her. But this was a great episode too. This was the first of the two episodes directed by Matt Shackman, the guy who had directed It's Always Sunny. And actually, I looked him up, and believe it or not, if you go and Google this dude, he was a child actor. And he was, it's funny. He's known now as a director and obviously doing Game of Thrones, but he was a child actor. He was on, he was in Growing Pains, and he was in Just the 10 of Us.
Oh, wow. That was the spinoff of Growing Pains.
He was in, this is Facts of Life, Different Strokes, Night Court, Webster. So, and if you look at a picture of him while he was a kid, you totally recognize him in a second. But anyway, he ended up directing these two episodes. And remember, these two episodes, 4 and 5, are the ones where each episode has a scene where there's like guards. So this is the one when Arya has that whole little funny scene with the guards, which upon reflection, I really liked it. And I remember when I was rewatching, I was like, this is a fun little scene. I like that they did this.
Yeah, I love that. I love the Brienne Arya fight scene, and Littlefinger and Sansa are watching, and Littlefinger, I mean, he doesn't talk, but he's like, oh, shit, I didn't realize she was a man of many faces. I think I just did Sean Connery, but whatever. But yeah, no, that, I loved that. This episode is probably, could be my favorite one. This, because I didn't expect the big fight sequence to happen when, oh man, it was just crazy. With Drogon's wounded, and you know, Bronn's firing arrows at him, and Jaime's trying to kill Khaleesi, and you know, Tyrion's like, "You dumb fool," or he's, whatever he says. I mean, just that whole, oh my god, you know, the Dothraki going nuts. And then also, I'm sure you like, did you like the scene with the cave with the dragon glass and Jon revealing to Dany about the First Men and the Children of the Fire? Children of the Forest joining together. Because it sets up like, hey, we need to join together and fight these White Walkers. So, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, no, dude, see, the more we go through these episodes, the more I remember that they're chock full of awesome scenes. It's like things are happening that we've been waiting for a long time, you know, and cool stuff.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing. We waited so long for a lot of this stuff to happen. Now that it's happening, you know, people are like, it's happening too fast. I'm like, no, we've been waiting for fucking 7 seasons.
Yeah, man. And even to go back to the whole Arya sparring with Brienne, which brings us back to when Brienne happened upon the Hound and Arya. It's like there were so many callbacks. It's like callback after callback. Oh, this was also where Cersei meets with the Iron Bank. And we learn that gold that we saw being loaded out at the end of the last episode, this is the way Cersei's paying him back, and that there was a big plan here, you know, and which is awesome, mm-hmm. right? Cluing us into Cersei's plotting this whole season. Tywin Cersei, you know, she learned from her dad. And what you said about the whole cave painting thing was just one of the coolest scenes. I want to go back and watch it now again. You know, yeah. I mean, that was really cool.
I would do it right now, but we're doing a podcast. So
And again, of course, here we are in episode 4. We ended episode 2 with a big fight scene. Then episode 4 ends with one of the coolest fight scenes in Game of Thrones history, which I guess I don't know what they're called. The producers called it what, the wagon train or something.
Oh, I don't know.
But this was awesome. Yeah. And then we have, okay, so what? So when we start off the next episode, which is Eastwatch,
you tricked me, thought it was going to be Hard Home Part 2. You got me excited.
I know. I got so excited. I was like, it's called Eastwatch. It's going to be Hard Home Part. Oh, my God. But it was a little disappointing. You want to move? Do you have anything else you want to say about episode 4?
No, let's move on to 5. Let's move like the season did.
Yeah, baby. So that was Spoils of War. Now we're on to Eastwatch, episode 5. Again, the second one directed by Matt Shackman. And we see that Jaime and Bronn are just sitting on the other side of that little lake, which is kind of dumb, but we keep moving because, you know, before you know it, we have Daenerys killing Sam's brother and father, which was another awesome scene. And ties yeah. in, and we see the evolution of Danny's character here. What were some of the other stuff that you liked in this episode, Eastwatch?
I mean, I didn't have a problem. I didn't realize the problem of Bronn and Jamie getting out of the water. I knew they weren't going to die, blah, blah, blah. But then listening to podcasts, how everyone hated it, and they were, well, the angle, if they saw him them going upstream. So then I was like, okay, I guess it doesn't work, but it didn't even dawn on me, I'll be honest. But I'm old. I don't have time to nitpick like that. Anyway, I liked the Davos smuggling Tyrion to King's Landing. And I loved Gendry finally coming back, and of course Davos saying, I thought you were still Rowan, or you know, and it just was pretty funny. The only thing I did have a problem with this episode was I did want more of Tyrion and Jaime. I wanted old school Thrones like they did in the finale, having that long scene. It was emotional. The actors did whatever they could, and it was a really good scene, but I guess I wanted the reunion to be more, just because I wanted to see them go at it again. And so it was more of a, for me, a selfish thing. I just wanted to see more screen time with them.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see that. And hey, it looks like we're going to get it, right? Because Jamie's headed that way. Yeah. So that's kind of interesting that, you know, hey, they left you wanting more, so that's good. Yeah, this was a crazy episode. This is where we find out that Cersei's pregnant. You're right. Gendry returns. We get that whole great trip there. Then this is the start of the Seven traveling past the wall, too, right? We end with the fantastic scene in the jail. And that great shot of them walking into the snow. I mean, this was a cool episode, man. There was, there was a big fight scene every other episode, right? So this is where we have the kind of getting ready for the next one. But this is where basically everything that happens in the finale is laid down most definitely in this episode.
Oh, yeah, because you got the whole Arya, Littlefinger spying on Arya, Arya spying on Littlefinger thing, that whole trap. Sam's like, screw it, I'm out of here. Fuck being a maester. Let's go, Gilly. I'm taking books with me. So we had that. You're right. That's an interesting, episode 5. Granted, we only have 7, but they're setting up the big stuff beyond the wall and in the finale. So, again, was it a great plan? Let's go get a white and bring it to Cersei. I don't know. That's another problem people had. What a dumb plan. Do you still think it was dumb, or do you think, I don't know if you ever thought it was dumb, but.
I did. I remember us talking about it. I was like, this is a dumb fucking plan. I did think it was dumb. Yeah. But when rewatching and preparing for this episode and thinking about where this fit in this plan, I started to get the feeling more it was a plan of desperation. And in that scene, they do seem desperate. Like, they're kind of like, what are we going to do? Like, the army of the dead is coming, yet we have this crazy woman who won't listen to us. And Tyrion's like, well, maybe, if I could talk to Jaime, maybe we do. And then the next thing you know, they just made up a plan. And I think I talked a little bit about this on the call in the other night. When Jaime gets there, and if they accept him into the fold, he's going to be the type of guy who would have said to them, well, that's a stupid fucking plan. Do you guys have any military idea? I think Jamie has a little bit more of a idea about these things. And in the end, did the plan work? I mean, I guess it did, right? But Cersei was going to do what she was going to do anyway. That's the point.
It didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
But you make a great effing point. they go to Castle Rock and have this great plan, and they get foiled. Highgarden's taken, the gold there. You know, they're not there. They lost a lot of their troops. Euron frickin' took out a lot of their ships and everyone. So they're screwed. And like you said, the White Walkers and the Army of the Dead are coming. What the hell do we do? So if we're in a room, like me, you, DJ Timmy Hines, Tracy, Mike Hull, you know, Joe Bear, Summertime, we're all in a room, and we got like a few minutes to decide. You may go, dude, let's just, fuck it, let's go get our best men, let's go grab a white, and let's bring it to, we need help. Yes. And I'd be like, fuck, actually, yeah. You know what, that's a better idea than I have. You know, granted, probably Tracy would have better ideas, and we probably wouldn't have to do that because she's smarter than all of us. And, well, Donald, too, you know. So, anyway, Donald would be like, as long as we write it well, I'll go do it with you guys. Donald. That'd be fun, though. That would be fun if all of us went north of the wall, and that'd be a fun trip. Anyway,
I just think love hanging out with us. I'd be the one who liked it the most because we'd be in the snow. I'd be like, this is awesome.
I know,
so
you would like it.
But
problem is me and Donald will be talking about something stupid, and then that White Walker bear would like get me, and Donald would be like, oh shit, all right. But so in retrospect, I know a lot of people are like, that's such a stupid plan, but they were so fucking desperate. What else were they going to do? Had they just said, we're not going to go to Cersei, we're just going to go fight this white, we don't have enough men, we'll get beat.
Yep.
And we'll die. So, in retrospect, it makes sense to me.
And I think that this is a point at which someone could make the argument, if you had a couple more scenes where you could get that desperation up to a level that sold us on this. But then we just have I think we just have to we have to allow for more immediacy in our reactions and our flow with the show. So, but again, I say that's how I kind of ended it, which is like we're saying, which is that they were desperate. It's a desperate, dumb plan. So they did it, you know?
Yeah. And it would have been executed better. You're right. If we had more scenes of like all of a sudden Danny, like, talking to Tyrion and just be like, oh my God, what the, you know, or John like, shit, we're wasting time here.
Yes.
But again, we don't, you know, if it's written well, it works. But if it's just stuff for us to hear, then the show becomes a network show. So it's kind of, you got to grasp, you got to get in between both and execute it right. They chose not to show us that, but yeah, it probably would have worked better for all, but hey, what are we gonna do?
Well, we
Beyond the Wall, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're gonna do. So now we have Beyond the Wall, which was just a couple weeks ago, and this is where they spent a fair bit more time with the Sansa and Arya stuff. I think they had like 3 or 4 scenes of it in this episode, and like we said, not the greatest part, but. We do have there basically most of the episode is taken up by what happens beyond the wall. And it was a lot that, you know, again, I rewatched this and the shots alone were spectacular. That's something that I think I've noticed more this season when I'm rewatching things is even pausing it. On certain shots, like the Arya and Sansa shot that ends their journey at Winterfell this season, like and when they are swooping down on them as they're like kind of cresting over as they're walking beyond the wall, it's amazing shots, man. It's just gorgeous, man.
Yeah, and I mean, granted. It was no Battle of the Bastards. It was no Blackwater. It was no Red Wedding. But I believe, you know, everything beyond the wall was effective. And granted, only Thoros got killed. You know, whether Tormund would have got killed at that point, would it have made it any better? I don't think so, to be honest. But I just, it was awesome to see White Walkers because we didn't expect that. You know, we had all predicted pretty much battle for King's Landing, final season battle against the undead. And we got a mixture. We didn't really get a battle for King's Landing. We got some battles, Castle Rock, Highgarden, but we got a big reveal here. And then the fact that, you know, the White Walkers and the Dead Army, they got a dragon.
Yeah.
It was all a plan. Like you said, like, it makes sense. The Night's King planned this all out, and, you know, and we got Benjen Stark's quick cameo and, but he was able to save Jon and,
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, I think Gary was going to say the same thing. Granted that a lot of people had a lot of problems with this episode, and there are, you know, with the Gendry, did I say it wrong again? Or did I say it right?
I don't even know. Gendry.
No, it's
you said
Jen.
Gendry. That
it's
sounds
Jen.
Good to me.
It's Jen. Yeah, it's Jen. But again, like I said, this was once I got over that too and kind of realized that like Thoros froze overnight and they were there for a little bit of time. You know, they were there for like over 24 hours and that it was a plan. That's like, I'm coming out of this season and talking about it on the show the other night with DJ, talking about it with you now. I was talking with A Hustler. I just see how the Night King was a character throughout this whole season, plotting and planning, similar to what Cersei was doing on that level, and did all of this to get them to that spot. I've been picking up on different foreshadowing things like how Jon and them use that little fire to get the White Walkers to come, and the White Walkers mm-hmm. use that little ice island to get the fire to come. Right?
Like, interesting. Yeah, right.
The more I thought about it, the more I picked up on just the little ways, the little hints that how the Night King just kind of stood there and watched. He could have killed Jon. He could have taken out that dragon, but no, that his point was he wanted to get that dragon that was flying around by itself. And I think it's interesting, man. There's going to be, I know that Mike and I had a disagreement in the preview episode where I said the White Walkers are not just a dumb, like faceless horde wanting to just kill. There's an intelligence there, and you see it that there's an intelligence here, because unbeknownst to us this entire season we were watching the Night King's plan play out before us, and this is where it eventually comes to fruition.
Throwing a spear, killing a dragon, resurrecting it as your own, that's got to have some intelligence.
Yeah.
Definitely, I'm just saying that. I mean, to me, you know, if, you know, non-intelligence to me is the whites. They just want to kill. Or, well, actually, they have some intelligence too, because when the hound throws the rock and they realize that it's frozen over, they.
But it's like a hive mind, right? That's something we learned in this episode too.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think there's more to the Night's King. There's an intelligence there. Because if he didn't have intelligence, they wouldn't be accomplishing what they have. He wouldn't have toyed with Jon at Hardhome and raised the dead and said, "What's up, motherfucker? You ready for this? You know, come on."
Yep.
But, you know, I think they're intelligent. But I think Mike Hall's intelligent too. So, I mean, wait, Mike Hall's probably the Night's King, and we're screwed. Oh, if he becomes the Night's King, then we better go back to the wall, guys.
I know. I think he's Bran. Maybe not. Maybe Mike.
He
is
could
Bran,
be Bran.
Who's the Night's
King? Oh my
King.
God! He could see us right now doing the podcast.
Okay.
We better move on
to the last episode then.
Yeah, we got to.
So the last episode, we get that we end, of course, with the eye of the Viserion, who is now the Ice Dragon, opening, and then we get to the next episode. The Dragon and the Wolf, the final episode, which we just talked about like last week, I think. And, but again, This was a great episode. We had this fantastic opening scene. We got to see people talk to each other, the Hound and Brienne. We got there's Pod talking to Bronn and Tyrion, and all. It was really cool, man. You know, you had the whole, what we've been talking about the whole time, the whole switcheroo with Cersei. One thing I wanted to bring up to you is we talked about this on the show with DJ, and I wanted to see what you had thought since then. Do you think that Tyrion had a further conversation with Cersei? There's a lot in the fandom now, people saying that maybe Cersei made some kind of deal with him because the scene just cuts off as they start drinking the wine. And then they're back there again, you know? They go to the John and Danny scene and then they're back there. So did you get a feeling that anything was happening between them in that scene?
You know, it's funny that you bring that up because you know, with the scene when John and Danny John comes to the room and they go and do their business. And we have that weird scene where Tyrion's looking like he's like, and originally I had thought Tyrion is like, oh great, now my influence isn't going to work. But then having you just say what you said, I remember watching the finale and wondering, I felt like something was missing. Why did Cersei all of a sudden say, okay, I agree, we're going to do what, you know? And that troubled me. And I don't think I brought it up in the initial reaction because we were so fired up about the, and then, you know, thinking about it, I'm like, I felt like something's missed. Put that together with that Tyrion look. Is he like regretting maybe he did make a deal with Cersei, you know, that he's going to double cross, you know? So it's definitely a possibility again, because we didn't see the end of that scene and we got the Tyrion look. If there is a reveal that Tyrion set something up or he made a deal with Cersei and it's finally revealed, we saw the foreshadowing. We versus the Arya Sansa stuff just kind of took us by force. This is how you set it up. So if something does happen, we kind of got those scenes. So I don't know, but I definitely feel like something was missing there with the agreement.
Yeah. See, I definitely think so. And I had kind of laid out a little bit of a theory the other night with DJ and Susan. And to make a long story short, my thinking was that perhaps Tyrion had made a kind of an arrangement with Cersei, and DJ brought in and Susan brought a great point. It could have to do with a multitude of things. It could have to do with the line of succession with Dany and Tyrion making some kind of promise thinking that Dany can't have kids. So maybe he could kind of say to Cersei, this kid you have, you know, he finds that out in the scene and he's a quick thinker. So he could say like, maybe I can convince Dany that your child would lead after. And perhaps it could also have something to do with Jaime. Why does Cersei let Jaime leave? Maybe it's purposeful. Maybe Tyrion was kind of like, give me my brother back. We need him. If you're not going to really fight for us, you know, maybe Cersei agreed not to go south and take and maybe she agreed to just to wait at King's Landing while they fight that fight. You know, so it could be a bunch of different things, but I didn't get the, and it that plays into the look that Tyrion gives too. But it didn't seem to me, I'm not buying at this point that like Tyrion's jealous, and I'm not buying that he has completely like turned his back on Dany or something, you know? I just do think that he still maybe is making bad decisions, you know?
Yeah, you know, the Tyrion character is very complex to me because he made some bad decisions. And then, like you said, the missing pieces of that scene with him and Cersei, and then the look, which just didn't seem to fit. in that context, but it could be many things. So there's definitely something more here. And then is Varys, you know, because everyone's thinking there's got to be a mole. I don't know if there is. We don't get much about Varys. We have, you know, an episode, I think two, we have the Varys Dany back and forth, and Varys kind of talks his way out of, you know, hey, I'm backing you. Don't kill me. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, is he and Tyrion pulling strings? Is it only one of them?
Yeah, man. I love that angle, dude.
So, because, you know, Varys and Tyrion have an interesting relationship. You know, remember, Varys tried to tell Shay, get the hell out of here, and, you know, gave her money and says, you could go have a nice life. And he, you know, so he looks out for Tyrion, but there's just an interesting dynamic with the two of them. So I wonder if they're on the same side, excuse me, as we think, but could they be other angles they're working to hedge their bets? You know, that's what's great for some off-season talk.
Yeah, man. Or it could also just be the beginning of both of them not having as much trust in Dany or Jon as they once did. I mean, that happens, right? Like, when you follow a leader into the flames, sometimes you get your burns. You get a little bit like, it's like when Varys was saying, you know, every time I led them to the Mad King, I said, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. So they have worries about her,
right?
You know, they have worries. So, but this final episode, man, I mean, it really did leave us in just a fantastic, crazy position because the wall came down. And that, for me, I have
John Mellencamp, baby.
Yeah, the wall. Oh, tumbling
down in the wall.
Go solo. We did. We promised Tariq that we'd do more singing on the show.
I know, Tariq. I will. I promise. I will sing more.
But I have to say, I have to admit this, and it kind of pains me to say it. This scene of when the wall came down, it was a little disappointing to me. It wasn't as earth-shattering as I thought it would be when the wall came down. I don't know. I thought that they might have people like feeling like vibrations, you know?
Oh, I was like, just going to bring that up, dude.
Yeah, like far away or like, I don't know. It was awesome. And when I rewatched it, I was like, this is really the dragon, everything. It's super cool. Little cheesy. The Night King looked a little bit like a action figure. And that might just be because he looks like an action, you know, he's got like almost that costume, you know, but I don't know. I have to admit it was.
Dude, picture this. Picture this. Close your eyes for me. Okay.
I'm doing it.
All right. There's a room at Eastwatch. Tormund and Barrack Dondarrion are having a drink and they're talking about getting laid, whatever. They're talking about Monopoly. All of a sudden, from the roof, some dust kind of falls. You hear a sound. You're like, what the? Then there's vibrations. Shit, what the hell's going on, guys? What the hell? You know, is Brienne here? Is having sex with someone else? No. They go outside, and you hear the dragon, and then they go up, and then you see the army of the dead, and then the action starts. Like you were saying, what if we had that little moment? It would have just enhanced it for me. It would have been more Game of Thrones-ish, not video game-ish. And though I did like the end scene, and I'm glad they didn't just end with the army of the dead staring outside the wall, we got to see the wall coming down. But I thought we might have been owed a scene or two of just establishing it, not just them overlooking it and then running away, which was effective, don't get me wrong, but I wanted something more surprising. Like if they were just in a room inside the East Watch, it would have surprised me a lot more, but it just would have felt more, oh my God, this big event's coming.
Yeah,
Open your eyes.
I see which a little bit more Spielberg-ish type of bringing letting us experience it from the inside.
Yeah.
Instead of the spectacle.
I mean,
Yeah.
Yeah. I've talked about this before, and I can never remember the episode, but what was the episode name again where the Night's Watch fight the wildlings at the wall? Do you remember the name of that episode? Whatever the name of the episode is.
I'm trying to think. Forget the name of that one.
Oh, right. You reminded me last time, but that's okay. Before the fight, they established so much with dialogue and getting ready. I mean, granted, it was a whole episode revolved around that. And at first, I didn't love the episode, but upon rewatch, I love it now. It's one of my favorites. But it had that, before the war, the whole, you know. I mean, maybe it would have been better for a cold open next season. We have that scene and that happens. I don't know. It's tough. I don't know because we almost needed it to end the season because it gave us like desperation and like, oh my God, this shit's going down in the last season.
Yeah.
You know, so again, we'll have 18 months to reflect. Still, I thought it was well done. It almost felt like it needed 30 minutes to do it, but we didn't have that. But to get that feel, you know, it might have caught us by surprise more. But
yeah, even if
it happened too fast.
Yeah, and maybe even if there had been some sort of historical, like if Tormund and Beric had been in like the crypts at the bottom of Eastwatch, and they were like finding old stuff, and they said like, you know, how long this wall has been here. You know what I mean? Like just like a moment of, hey, we're saying kind of maybe obvious or reflective things, but yeah, for me, I guess that they went more for like the bam. And I think that is kind of maybe this season looking forward. I think that there was a lot of bam in this season. That's one thing I'll say is, like we talked about, it's like a battle almost it was about every other episode. A lot of special effects. And I just for the wall coming down, this one for me was probably the most disappointing of all of them, and yet it had so much significance. So even though I really enjoyed the season, I was shocked when it happened. And man, I was like, oh my God. And my reaction after. But then, like I say, when I rewatched it and when I thought about it later, I just felt almost like it was, I almost kind of, like I think I said it that night too, it was like, it was really only kind of part of the wall. You know, it wasn't like the whole wall. Like, I guess I always thought that the wall would go down at the part where we had always seen it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Not at this far off castle, you know, but, you know, more so the place that we had come to know and recognize and had other battles at and seen Jon die. I thought that was the place where we would see the wall come down. So it would have more of that significance, but maybe that's to come.
Maybe.
Right. Maybe Castle Black falls. Maybe that's the first episode, you know, like they start coming from everywhere now, you know, like
it's possible.
They kind of brought the defenses down. But all right, Solo. Well, listen, we went, I think, a lot longer than we thought. So let's save. We're going to save our predictions and we're going to save our character breakdowns. We're going to do some character breakdown episodes in the off season. You know, just so everybody knows.
Perfect.
Stick with us. We're going to keep on doing Game of Thrones stuff. This is going to be the last regular episode. It might be a couple weeks before Heath and I release another episode together about Game of Thrones, but we've got a ton of other stuff that's coming out. Mike and Jason Bailey are doing The Deuce. You can follow them at The Deuce DVR on Twitter. You can also Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher. It's everywhere. DJ Tim Hines has just recorded his first episode of Inside DJ's DVR, which we're going to be dropping.
Rip off of the film list.
Oh,
no, I'm just kidding.
Man.
I dropped that.
We're going to be doing an enhanced film list. We're going to be doing more film lists. We're going to be doing other kind of stuff. I've got two other podcasts that we're negotiating with some podcasters of note to come and join with us, but we're still trying to work that out. And we also do have the Mike and Tracy are dropping the deep dive. We've got Mike is planning on doing.
I thought you were saying Mike and Tracy going to drop a deuce.
No,
I was like,
drop a deuce. No, Mike's dropping the deuce.
Wait,
Mike and Jason are dropping deuces.
JB.
We've got tons of Mike's doing some written episodes that we're going to have some other people involved with too. So we got a ton of other stuff. Solo, is there anything you want to say season or anything? Is there anything you wanted to say?
No, I'm just proud to be a member of the DVR Podcasting Network. I had a great time with you doing the initial reaction. Thank you for overcoming my shortcomings and technical difficulties to make this happen so we could podcast together, because I have crappy internet in my new place, but Axel worked his magic and said, we can do it. And though it may screw up if we do a big round table, I don't know if I'll be able to do a part of that, but at least I'll be able to podcast from all my boy Axel and do some film lists as well. But also just a special shout out to the crew. You know, Donald, I know he was busy and he couldn't do as much, but we always love hearing Donald. Mike and Tracy, knowledgeable as hell, love listening to them. And DJ, I'll be honest, I was like, wow, DJ's gonna do the call-in show, that should be interesting. Then I remembered he's a fucking DJ, he can work at his magic, and I thought he did a stupendous job. And I just want to give a special Heath Solo thumbs up to DJ. What a job he did on the call-in show. It was flawless. You know, you did a great job doing your call-in show during the Lost Days. And then Matt, when he did podcast Winterfell call-in show, I was like amazed. And now DJ, it's just like, it's amazing that our friends and our fellow podcasters that we've united to this community, and people are just, you know, I love the fact that, you know, DJ started as being in our chat in the Lost Room as Cortexy Junkie, you know, and now he's become one of the main co-hosts of the DVR Podcasting Network. It makes me happy to just hear new voices, and even though DJ's not a new voice, but for him to do his own show, it just really, I don't know, I felt like a not a proud dad, but I felt like, there's my boy, he's kicking it. So I just really enjoyed the content we put out, and you know, as much as if I was on every episode, I wouldn't really listen. But the fact that, you know, we do a show and then I can listen to three or four other podcasts a week, even though it's my family, it's so enjoyable. So I just, you know, I just really, and I got to put it out there, as Axel had mentioned to me, I'll pay you, Donald, if you do a 2.5 Men podcast drunk, recapping the seasons. Please, the DVR Podcasting Network needs you doing 2.5 Men rewatch. And Axel brought that up and I died laughing. I'm like, yes, I will give Donald, you know, $5, $100, whatever he wants. I will, you know, whatever it takes for him to do 2.5 Men instant reactions, I would love it.
Dude, yes, we were talking about that would be a dream, where Donald just does a whole season of 2.5 Men, like sits in his apartment. We send over a bunch of beer, whatever he wants. Sits
or a house. He has a house. He has
oh,
a house.
Yeah, no, that's true. He has a house. That's right. He sits at his house, watches an episode, records like a half hour instant react, watches another one, record, and just does that for, I guess it would take, you got what, 20 episodes, half hour?
Probably 24.
Yeah, it would take a little over a day. He doesn't need to sleep, right?
No. He could 12 do hours it. Of podcasting, he could do it. Even if 15 minutes of one episode.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
And maybe 20 for a finale.
Okay. We got a deal. 20 for the finale.
It's done.
All right. Donald, well, this done. I just want to say too to you, Solo. It's been great. We've been doing this. This is our. We've been here every week through the whole thing. This is like week 9 or so, I guess, week 8. It's been fantastic coming together with you and doing the show. And I know we're going to do more stuff over the off season, but it is just fantastic to, you know, that we kind of set that goal. We followed through. We did all the episodes. It was a lot of fun. And I just love having an opportunity just to talk to you, baby.
Oh, yeah. And all the work you do, Axel, editing and carrying this whole new vision of yours. It, we've always talked about, oh, we want to do our own podcasting network and how great it would be. And the amount of time you put in and you from day one is like, we're doing it, baby. And you freaking never, I don't know how you find the time. But you do it. And so we all thank you for all the hard work you do to put these out there. Without you, baby, it's just Talk Shoe Clowns.
Yeah, man. Well, thanks, everybody. And really, without the listeners, it's nothing. So
well,
we just want to
exactly.
thank
It'd be us
all
listening
of them.
To each other.
Yes. And we want to thank all of our patrons out there. And, you know, we hope everybody sticks with us. We're going to keep on doing a lot of great podcasts, and I'm probably going to pop some of them onto the Winterfell feed so people can see it's out there. Hey, if you don't like it, delete it, but it'll give you a little taste of what the new podcasts are as well. So stay subscribed, and you want to take us out, Solo?
Yes, it's been a great season. I'd say I'd miss you all, but there's nothing to miss. We're going to have plenty of content in the off season. So to our Daragelis, Dracaris, Valhalla, Juliana, Margulies, and R plus J equals Solo and Folo.
Thank you for listening to Podcast Winterfell. Podcast Winterfell is a part of the DVR Podcast Network. You can check us out at dvrpodcast.com. Become a patron. Go to Patreon/DVR. Follow us on Twitter at WinterfellPod. Follow us on Facebook at Podcast Winterfell. And follow the DVR Podcast Network at DVR Podcast.